Hello and welcome. This is The Thing About Cars. I'm Mickey Desai. Around the table, we have a full house. Dave, how are you doing?
I am doing well, Mickey. Thanks for asking.
Excellent. Ben, what is up?
The sky.
Misty, coming to us from across one of the ponds. Misty, how are you?
I'm fine. It was actually sunny today.
That's great. And Dawn, our last but certainly not least regular co-conspirator, Dawn, how is things in your world?
Oh, it's spinning around.
Yes, that's true. Our special guest for today is an old friend, Brian Phillips. Brian, say hello.
Hello, good evening, and good afternoon, good morning.
And good night.
And good night. And that's it for The Thing About Cars. No, I'm just kidding. So a couple quick announcements before we do our grand trivia auto question for the day. It looks like British Car Day is happening here in Atlanta on September 4. Isn't that right, Ben?
Yeah, that's correct.
Are we going to go?
Well, at least I'm going to be there. I don't know about you, but I hope to see everybody there.
Can we talk to those guys about maybe doing recording there like we did with Italian Car Day? Would that be fun?
I will certainly inquire. It would definitely be fun.
Yeah, if the rest of the gang's up for that, I think we should do it.
And just to for a little bit of specificity here, this is Atlanta British Motor Car Day, which is not to be confused with the Atlanta British Car Fair, F-A-Y-R-E. Those are two different events. And yeah, so anyway.
Yeah, are you taking the Lotus?
Oh, of course.
Yes, of course. All right. And along those lines, Italian Car Day has also announced October 2. Italian Car Day Atlanta, that is happening on October 2. And I hope we can have a good solid visit with them again, too. Our grand trivia auto question for the day. Dave has our question for the day. Dave, what have you got?
A little context before I ask this question. Mickey and I were chatting online earlier this week, and I think it was probably a very confusing experience for Mickey because I was breaking my rule, never drink in post. And we bounced back and forth through the conversation of cocktails and cars, not simultaneously, but at different times. We weren't really sure what we're talking about, which led me to think, are there car-named cocktails out there? And there are. So I was a bartender for a hot minute, and I had never heard of this particular cocktail. So the cocktail we're asking about this week is made with 1.5 shots of Calvados, 1.5 shots of Dubonnet, the Queen's favorite, and 2 dashes of Peychaud's Bitters. Is this drink known as a Le Mans, a Bentley, a Ferrari, or a Harley Davidson? And we'll revisit this at the end of the show.
Yeah. Okay. What are those ingredients again, Dave? I don't think I'm familiar with the first one.
1.5 shots of Calvados. Calvados is an apple brandy from the north of France. 1.5 shots of Dubonnet and 2 dashes of Peychaud's Bitters.
Okay. All right. Very cool. I can't wait to hear that answer. Our guest for today is Brian Phillips. Brian contacted us. First of all, he's an old friend and we've known each other for a while, which is basically the definition of old friend. So I'll probably edit some of that out. Brian wrote to us. Brian had been driving the same old car for how long?
I had driven my old car for slightly under 21 years.
And did the car have a name?
That was Wes.
Wes.
Afterwards, so Montgomery.
And what was Wes?
Wes was a 1998 Nissan Maxima, which I had purchased in 2001.
Got it. So you were the sole owner of the car of Wes for that full 21-year period.
That's correct.
And you wrote because you recently upgraded from Wes. Is that correct?
That's correct.
What happened? What'd you do?
After a time, we knew that this was going to be the year we need to change the cars, but it became too expensive to maintain this. It still ran almost as quietly as the day I bought it. And the problem became that I would have to fill it with oil every other trip. And to repair it, they said they would need to take the engine out to actually find where the leaks were and fix all of them. So we decided at 444,365 miles, it was time.
Holy mackerel, that's a lot of miles.
Yeah.
Go Wes.
Without changing a belt or a hose.
Oh.
Are you serious?
Wow.
Without a hose is really amazing considering the way Nissan cooling systems are made.
Yeah.
Well, this was the thing that I found out. We bought subsequent, because we thought, my goodness, we've got a good thing rolling. We bought a 2011 Altima for my good lady wife. And what we did not know that in the interim, Renault had bought a controlling interest in Nissan, and the quality went down. Mm-hmm.
Oh,
almost
yeah,
no. Immediately afterwards. So right around 1999 or so was your last good hope of getting a decent Nissan if it had an automatic transmission.
Wow, so surprise.
The JADCO transmissions on those went rather southward in quality. And so mine went fine. I mean, it had some, I had to do the suspension, and the one time the electrical system had gone funny on me. But that was after about 18, 19 years.
So what's the new car?
The new car is a 2018 Mazda 6 touring model.
Ah.
Nice. Yeah.
Two thumbs up from me. I'm firmly in the Mazda camp.
So am I.
Yeah.
So Wes has been, you know, sent off. Does the Mazda have a name?
Ah, yes. The Mazda does have a name. That is Guerrero Rodriguez. Guerrero, in particular, because I was a fan of the rather short-lived show Human Target, and Guerrero, the rather psychotic hitman that was on their side, was very fussy about his Eldorado. Don't touch the Eldo, dude. And I'm very much in the parental doting stage of my car right now. I barely even eat in it. And Rodriguez is because of Sixto Rodriguez. If you remember a documentary called Searching for Sugar Man, it was a documentary about a rather obscure musician, and his first name was Sixto, and this is a Mazda 6, so henceforth the name. I went with a touring model because I did not want a turbo.
Why did you avoid a turbo?
I'd heard that after a while they become difficult to service. Also, they've made mention of you have to warm it up, and then you have to let it cool down. And I thought to myself, I just don't want to do that much thinking, per se. Also, I don't need to really go that fast. I'm no longer living in Los Angeles when I bought the... sometime after I'd gotten the max, we'd gotten the max when we moved here. And it actually worked out to my benefit because that was a V6 and I had to get on the freeway quickly, but I don't really need to go horribly fast. And also the horsepower difference is about 30. So it's very, very, very negligible. And that's plenty fast enough for me. And I'm also a horrible cheapskate, so I don't want to spend the extra money for the $5 or $6, you know, 5 or 6 miles of gas that I'd be losing with a turbo.
I respect the cheapskate. I have to tell you, you put more thought into naming your cars than my sister put into naming her children.
I had 20 years.
Yeah.
The subsequent time that had passed changed as far as how to research for a car. And you could be much, much more thorough nowadays. When we looked in 2001, all we had was Consumer Reports and maybe Consumer Guide. Also, going into CarMax and just saying, wow, look, that color looks cool, and going after that. But nevertheless, nowadays there are many, many online resources, and it made, and so I had it, and also the fact that we didn't have the money for a good long time, I had plenty of time to look and research to try to find which car I wanted to go to, because Mazda was not my first choice.
No.
Mazda was not your first choice.
No.
Hurt.
Well, first off, if you don't mind me calling other podcasts or other broadcasts out, I'd looked at Scotty Kilmer, and he badmouthed Mazdas because he didn't like the transmissions, and he had said that they were their quality was poor. But one thing that Mazda did do is that they have recently gotten rid of Ford, which was which meant their quality went up, and also they had started to collaborate with Toyota. Also, they started taking the making of their transmissions in-house. So that interested me. Also, I would have gone with a Honda, because before that, I had a Honda Accord, which I had 235,000 miles on it. And the only reason we gave that one up, our mechanic at the time said, I'm not going to work on this car. You must replace it. Matter of fact, it stopped running about a month before I'd gotten rid of it. And it stopped in Avondale Estates here in Georgia. And I prayed on it and I told it, please start. And when it realized it was on the chopping block, it started every time since then to try to work its way back into my favor. But the Nissan run beautifully. And then I'd gone to the site, and then I found out all the mergers that had happened, all the ups and downs of quality. And so after eliminating turbos, after eliminating what I could and couldn't afford, because the other possibility was a Toyota Avalon, I eventually settled on the Mazda as far as price point was concerned and whether I could fit in it, because when I get up, I'm all legs. I'm 6'1", and 5'4" of that is nothing but legs. So consequently, I needed to make certain that I had something that would actually fit me. Yeah. And when I go to car shows, I do what the car people call sizing. The first thing I do is I sit in it, and then I say, okay, I can fall in love with this on the outside. Now what's the interior like? And Honda, for whatever reason, does not tend to fit very well. Volkswagens do. I have no idea as to why, but I didn't mean to pay attention to it. I don't recall even paying attention to it at the show because it has a very small presence. And if you look at the sales figures are very, very low compared to Toyota's. But that was the one that I eventually went with.
Amazing. So you really did the research. You did the deep dig, and Mazda came out on top.
Mazda came out on top. I looked at various sites. I looked at there are sites that tell you who's had problems with them, because people love to go on the internet and tell you how wonderful everything is. Yeah. I'm kidding. I went in and looked at all the complaints, and the complaints were almost non-existent for that particular year of the Mazda 6. The Avalon, you could drive into the ground, but there are two problems with it. One, they're very expensive. Two, the seat will not flip down. And I DJ as well as work in IT, and putting equipment into the trunk is a factor, and it would not let me do that. However, I would have been driving an Avalon. Oh, also, I'm sorry, one small side note. I looked at the Avalon, the average age of buying an Avalon was something along the lines of 62. When I thought to myself, I didn't want to walk in and buy an old man's car. I'm 57, but by the same time, I just don't want to admit it. It's akin to buying the Keds that you see, the blue ones that have the three laces on there, which I call old lady deck shoes, because that's all I ever saw was old ladies wearing them. Never sailors. But I didn't want to buy a car that was the equivalent of an old lady deck shoe.
I have a question for you, but I think Ben had a question.
Oh, well, not so much a question as much as sort of a comment. The thing with the Ford-era Mazdas, I've never heard any quality complaints. That's what I've got, and that's what I see more of on the road than later ones, honestly. But as far as tall people go, I've kind of fallen out of Mazda love. I mean, I love my 2013 3, but the newer ones are not built for big, tall people. I have driven a 6 and one of the SUVs, real late model ones, as rentals on my business trips, and I had a little trouble getting in and out because by the time I got the seat back and the steering wheel both back far enough for me to fit well, there was only about 15 inches of space between the door jamb and the steering wheel to get in and out through. The Kodo era, you know, design generation therein really seems to have, you know, had a little bit of an impact on the interior space.
Well, my husband has the CX-5. It's 4 years old, and he doesn't have any problems. The funniest part about that, though, is when I get in to drive his car and I'm adjusting the seat, and it takes like 30 seconds for me to get the seat up far enough where I can even grace the pedals with my little bitty toesies.
Now, how tall is your husband?
6'9".
Okay, and you are?
5'1.5".
Okay, I can see the difference.
You can see it from Mars, actually.
That's also like in my wife's Challenger. You know, she's about 5'5", and I'm about 6'4". And, you know, we always have this thing about moving this seat in that car, and the biggest gripe everybody has with the Challenger, us included, is that there's no memory function on the electric seat.
I was just going to ask if anybody of you had memory functions, because I find that's a saving grace for, you know, two different size people.
Oh, the X5 does. Yeah.
I love you guys, but first world problems, okay?
Of course.
Well, okay, his CX-5 does, but my MX-5 doesn't. Not that he can fit in my MX-5. And after listening to you, Brian, and your whole, you know, I researched this and this and this, I kind of feel like a slovenly person, because I just looked at my Mazda and went, she's so pretty. Can I grabby hands? She go fast on Autobahn? Yes? That was pretty much how Claudette, her name is Claudette, came into my life.
Well, yeah. I have two blessings. One of my parents' thoroughness and also poverty. I had nothing to do but to stew and to sit until I eventually could look at this. I didn't have the luxury of money or anything. And so I'm not to say that everyone here is horribly rich, but by the same token, that gave me the time to do that because I can be impulsive on certain things, but I can tell you quite simply that to quote a comedian's routines that she had spoken to a friend of hers who was a cheerleader in high school. And she asked, how did you pick out your new car? I said, well, I knew the loan that I had. And I also looked at what I could afford. And so she said, very well, what car did you get? She said, a blue one. But we found one of our cars that way. It was green, but it turned out that it actually was a pretty not only a nice green, but also a very good car. But I only had anecdotal evidence to go on for the previous Mazdas because I just didn't know anybody. No one in my family drove them, I had to go with what I had seen. But I'm pleasantly surprised that Misty, your husband, can fit into the CX-5 because I didn't find myself horribly comfortable in a CX-5 for whatever reason, and I'm 6'1".
Yeah. Oh, and we've taken the CX-5 from our house to just south of Venice, Italy, which is about a 15-hour drive.
No. Yeah.
And we also went to just north of Barcelona, which is about the same. And the car he had before was a Hyundai i40, like a station wagon. I hate that car.
Yeah.
Hated that car. And the CX-5, it has the most legroom because being female and also having ADHD, I can't just travel with like my purse. There has to be a bag with like knitting stuff in it so I can drive and, you know, so I can ride and books and everything. And so I have just like this big shopper bag that has to sit right in front of me. You know, it can't sit in the back because I can't reach it. So this car has the best legroom. Also on the passenger side, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm kind of sad because the lease is up. It's a company car and he may have to get another one. And I'm like, no, please.
So this leads me to my last question for Brian before we get into the standardized questions at the end of the segment, which is, why did you not put SUVs or did you have SUVs on your radar with all the hauling around of stuff you have to do for the DJ stuff with the DJ gigs? Why a sedan and not a CX-5 or CX-9 for that matter?
It was a matter of cover. I grew up outside New York City, and I'm always a big fan of hiding everything that I had, and everything that I tend to haul around fits in a sedan. And that means if I close the trunk, everything's done. And very few times did I have to tie the trunk down to haul anything. I've never been an SUV person. I've driven them, certainly. I've driven them for work. I've driven them previously, and I have nothing against them per se, but I just didn't want to necessarily have anything showing. So that's the reason I didn't run that. To Misty's point, as far as attention is concerned, that's the one thing I noticed in the difference in the 20-year interim. I no longer had cruise control on my Nissan. The air conditioning had no longer worked. I put it into drive and the car quite literally asked, who, me? And then for 20 seconds would not go into drive. And the driving experience now, I have adaptive cruise control. So it actually you put it into cruise control and it actually regulated speed. It does so much for me. I actually started nodding off the wheel for the first week that I had it because it was very difficult for me to maintain my attention. I've gotten to a point where I wondered whether the car actually even needed me anymore. I one of these days I have to come back and with peanuts and cereal and it says, we know what kind you want. I just went as opposed to even getting into it and starting it.
Yes, that is true. It really, I mean, and we're so close to autonomous vehicles.
Yes, we're very close. All right, Brian, I'm sorry, Misty, one more thing. Go ahead.
I don't know. I'm torn between autonomous vehicles and like a little personal pod I can attach to public transportation.
Yes.
I just don't want to talk to anybody, but I don't want to have to actually drive all the time. I mean, I love to drive, don't get me wrong. But I also like to sit and watch the city, well, especially Amsterdam, go by without having to worry about a bicyclist.
Yeah. I mean, see, I'd like to sit and read a book between Macon and Savannah. That's I-16. if you could just put your vehicle on something and it just went and you just sat there and had a drink.
I mean, I like to drive, and I'm a natural road tripper. I do hundreds and hundreds of miles each week for business, but I-16, oh my God.
Yeah. Boring. And literally, you for long stretches of time, you could let go.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah. Brian, I understand you do are you still spinning, and do you do anything with radio or podcasts?
Yes. As a matter of fact, because of social distancing, we can no longer have our monthly gig at the Elmira Burrito Lounge, but you can catch us online on Mixcloud, and it's called Mixcloud Rhythm and Blues. We call it Soulful Distancing, my partner Jason Stone and I. And also, I have a monthly radio show on rockandradio.com, no G, called The Electrophonic Sound of Brian Phillips, named for my brother's stereo electrophonic. It doesn't mean anything. It means I can play whatever it is that I'd like to play.
Excellent. Can't wait to check it out. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
All right, Brian, we got a handful of questions for you, our standard questions that we ask every guest. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Money's no object. What is your dream car?
In 1972, I went to the International Auto Show in the New York Coliseum. There were two cars that struck me. One was a Lamborghini Modulo, which had all the controls on a spear, which might interest Misty. However, the thing that really struck me was the Buick Silver Arrow 3. It was a concept car, which they eventually used on the Riviera, but it had not one, not two, not four, but six headlights and the strange wraparound back to it. And I always thought that was absolutely lovely. Being a Buick of that time, I would have been able to drive it for about 5,000 miles before it broke down, but that was my dream car.
Yeah. Very cool. Where is your next road trip going to be?
My next road trip most likely is going to be into a very small town into Florida to see a friend of mine, Mr. Robert Lights, who I've known since childhood. And we met because his daughter passed, and we got in contact with each other again through Facebook. And before he and his daughter, I and his daughter could talk again, she'd passed away. So I had gone down and struck up a relationship with him again. So that's where I'm most likely I'll go next to. And it's a small town. It's near a town called Mikesville, which is so small, it was missed by the census.
Wow. Goodness. Okay. Question number three, what's the most fascinating thing you've seen on the road or maybe in someone's house or garage?
The most fascinating thing I've seen on the road would be the rather large tire that I'd seen when I used to do installs in Detroit. So therefore, I would drive down the, it's not the 95, but it's, I think maybe the 40 has a large tire there. But the most interesting thing I've seen here, which will never be duplicated again, was my wife and I were driving in Stone Mountain. We looked to the left and there was a couple standing in their driveway. A shorter woman and an older balding man. And both my wife and I said almost simultaneously, oh my goodness, American Gothic. It was the same composition. The only thing that was missing was a pitchfork.
That's hilarious.
I've been to that house, by the way. It's in southeastern Iowa. Yes, it's a real house.
That's oh, fantastic.
Yeah. And, right. And I have seen daughter. The Nebulo too. It was in art exhibit, as a concept car exhibit at the High Museum here a few years ago. Mm-hmm. I'll correct you on the manufacturer. It was actually a concept by Pininfarina, the Italian bodywork firm, and it was based on a Ferrari 512 racing chassis.
Ah, thank you very much.
But it's a very cool car. I lust for it too.
Brian, our last question for you is always something random and silly. My question for you today is, what is your most favorite or most useful kitchen gadget?
My most favorite and most useful kitchen gadget. That would be, there is the Forge FM Kreiswagen of kitchen utensils. It is a corkscrew bottle opener. And I just rather like the idea that as you you turn the corkscrew into it, the arms raise up as in prayer, which I just think is lovely. And I'm a teetotaler, but I just love seeing that when we have company over and I open up a bottle of wine. So I find that the most useful kitchen utensil.
Very cool. Well, Brian, thank you for being our guest today. I hope you'll hang out for the rest of the episode and chime in on our discussions.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you very much for having me.
Excellent.
And I apologize for taking all the oxygen out of the room. Everyone can now start breathing normally again.
it's all good. It's all good. For our next segment, we have Dawn on the Autobahn. Dawn, take it away.
Oh, thank you, Mickey. Well, I wish I were on the Autobahn, but actually, our section today is about street racing. I do public policy and lobby work, and the Georgia General Assembly ended last day of March, and there were bills that were introduced, and one of them by a senator who's a car dealer. And it's about drag racing, you know, and heightening drag racing from just a regular misdemeanor to a felony, raising the fees on it, and really addressing a lot of folks that are putting nitro chargers into their vehicles to go really fast. So I started wondering, was Georgia unique, or was it across the country? Because we just ended and there are other sessions that are still in. And as it turns out, Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi all have legislation that would address, you know, street racing. And I thought, well, this is interesting. It's across the South. But there are many, many, many legislatures that are looking at it. And it's again, started getting me thinking about every time I've taken my vehicle out and gone up into Atlanta, you know, it does seem like we've got a lot of folks that are just going at excessive rates of speed. And a lot of these penalties for street racing are going to be pretty severe. I haven't looked specifically at the law in Georgia, but I just want to talk generally across the country. I mean, there's everything from taking one's car away for a year to taking one's license away for a year. And I got to thinking about maybe what are some people doing to try to address it, but allow people to, you know, I mean, because it's really concerning. I mean, there's deaths that have happened and really badly bodily injuries. You know, people are really hurt. So I started thinking, well, maybe if they could look at some industrial areas where people actually also want to do burnouts and they want to do, you know, really fun, you know, donuts and such. What that would think like, and could we turn some of our speedways that are waiting? But that gets into a whole liability issue, and it turns on the fact that now you've commercialized it, and is it as much fun as regular street racing? So, which again, not that I'm trying to condone illegal activity, but you know, there's just kind of different sides to this whole equation. Because you then start to take it out of the realm of what, you know, what kids used to do way back when. So I don't know. I condone it, but I'm wondering, what are you all thinking? What are you seeing lately? I was really surprised that some of these bills are in the South. And, you know, what are y'all thoughts?
Oh, I would absolutely be in favor of passing these bills. Just given the amount of potential danger involved, I mean, you know, it's almost like walking into a public space and just firing random shots into crowds.
It is pretty dangerous. There are a lot of people, not just people in the cars, but pedestrians, bikers.
Yeah.
That have been killed, animals. I mean, there are some really terrible, terrible accidents.
As a friend of mine, you know, out in California, you know, likes to say gasoline makes people stupid. You know, I mean, you take how bad the average driver is, then put them in a street racing situation where adrenaline is addling their brain and they're really not thinking rationally. You know, yeah.
I thought it was testosterone that did the irrational thing.
Well, both.
So
they could play into each other.
So I looked at a lot of these videos, especially folks that are doing donuts and burnouts in parking lots or on the street. And I was kind of not surprised that it was all young men that were doing it. So that was kind of interesting. Very few women were partaking. Thought that was kind of, because I mean, going fast, it's, you know, the speed, the competition, you know, and I have a feeling a lot of these folks also just don't know what their cars can do. They don't know really how to deal with their cars in a very difficult turn or, you know, other situation. You know, they're talking about a lot of these drivers, they don't realize just how dangerous this can be.
Well, I've got to point out before we go further here is that Misty is a very famous street racer in the Netherlands. And Brian, when the sun goes down, Brian becomes the ghost rider.
Well, I wouldn't call myself a street racer. I'm just, yeah, you know, I just like to let men, and I'm going to qualify this by saying it's very frequently middle-aged men driving Ford leased cars from their job. So I'm going to also go in there a little further and say middle management, who apparently find it very offensive that a woman is driving a Mazda MX-5 and think they can beat me off the line. And I'm like, oh, sweetheart, no, honey, I'm from Raven County. That ain't going to happen. want to go a lot faster than me and then rack up like 3 speeding tickets between Bürgermeister Braun Schlotzschingel, which is the road at the end of my neighborhood, and the Provincial 207, which is how we get to Amsterdam. Because right. there's 3 cameras right there. And there was one guy that hit every camera. And my husband was like, why did you do that to him? I said, why are you blaming me? Because it's not my fault that his testosterone got the better of his brain. And he wanted to throw down with a girl from Raven County. Because that ain't going to happen.
Well, that's actually kind of interesting, Missy, because, you know, having someone that learned to drive in Europe and on the Autobahn and small towns, there are speed limits. I mean, people don't realize that even over in Europe, there are definitely speed limits. And
oh, yeah. Well, we have in the Netherlands, especially if you're in a developed area, it's 50 kilometers an hour. You know, so from the moment you turn off the 207 into my town, it's 50 kilometers an hour. And on the provincial road, it's 80 kilometers an hour. You know, of course, the Dutch are like really uptight. And they're like, oh, you can't be driving so fast. It's bad for the environment. And I'm like,
those darn Dutch.
Well, no, I'm like, oh my God, people.
I was wondering, do you feel that the pandemic has caused somewhat of an uptick in street racing? And by the way, also
definitely
Ghost Riders in the Sky. Ghost Riders in the Sky, by the way, that song was written about me, and royalties partially financed the Mazda that I bought.
Okay, so a quick aside here. This has nothing to do with cars, not immediately anyway, but I've got to talk about Brian's superpower. Brian has a singularly unique talent with music and music trivia, and I have seen him identify songs with no context. No lyrics. You can say something like 1962 quartet folk music, and Brian will read your mind and give you the proper name of the song.
But I'd like to, the superpower is this. Please name a song from the 60s or the 70s or the 50s. Skip Rock Around the Clock. I get that one a lot, and that sound like a plant. But any other song, can anyone think of one?
From the 60s or the 70s?
Or the 50s, yes.
Okay.
Help was originally going to be called Eight Arms to Hold You. If you look at some of the early pressings of that, it was called that. In German, the translation is Kihihi Hilfe. It was recorded in 1965. It is in B flat. It was written by John Lennon. It was recorded. The movie was directed by Richard Lester. And the soundtrack for Hard Day's Night came out on United Artists, but this one actually came out on Parlophone in England and in Capitol in the United States. That's recorded by the Beatles. And I don't know of too many covers of that, but there were some. There's one in Sesame Street, about oddly enough. Sesame Street used to do covers of popular songs in both Help and Spinning Wheel.
Wow.
So that's the superpower.
That is the superpower, yes.
I've got one.
Okay.
Little Red Riding Hood.
Little Red Riding Hood was recorded by Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. His actual name is Sam Samudio. Oddly enough, Domingo Samudio is his actual name. He actually won a Grammy for his liner notes, Sam Hard and Heavy, won a Grammy for the liner notes. But Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs had several songs. Woolly Bully in 1962, that was a hit. And the other one was a Little Red Riding Hood. And that is in E minor. I can't recall the label. Oh, yes, I can. That was recorded for MGM.
All right. So I'm going to get us back on gear here. And to say to Dawn, first of all, I'm flummoxed, right? I'm like, how do you do that? But let's get back on track here. I'm going to take devil's advocate position here, Dawn, and say that street racing is an American right my right as an American man to get in my car and put my foot in my fuel injectors and go.
Well, let's go back to Brian's question about the pandemic.
Yes.
It's just been interesting that since last April, different cities have seen this. I mean, most cities have seen it. And I was reading a report from Arkansas that they were having Sunday fun day or coronavirus parades where hundreds of cars were caravanning and drag racing and drifting and doing all that stuff that they want to do, which led to 142 traffic violations, 217 traffic charges, 144 misdemeanors, 18 felonies, and 15 vehicles being towed. When I looked at statistics in 2019 across the country, racing on public highways doubled. I mean, it really was the pandemic. So to your point, Mickey, that, you know, this is a right, or it's not right, but it certainly is something fun and something people have been doing. It just seemed that during the pandemic, it got out of hand. It got really, really crazy. So actually, I'm wondering if there should be a Sunday fun day and maybe, you know, let people find a strip that it was police blocking and cordoning off each side and let them go crazy. Of course, the insurance companies, I'm sure, will have a lot to say about that. And as well as do you every kind of insurance company, not just car insurance companies, but health insurance companies. So it just was a very interesting thing as we're coming out of the pandemic to, I love statistics, and to see what happens over the next year as more and more people now are back in their cars and tooling to and from, and not as open freeway as there used to be. And if they end up down, as it would happen, between Macon and Savannah, where there aren't a lot of people drag racing down I-16. So that's kind of just the research that I've done about being on the long haul, being on the Autobahn, and we'll see what happens within the next year.
Ben, you were about to say?
Well, it might be your RITE, but it is not your RIGHT. you have no legal right to put your foot into it.
Nope.
But this is America, and I bought the car, and I want to go fast.
Yeah, it's all a privilege within the law. There is no legal framework for
well,
for hooning around.
Well, just a cautionary tale that there are a lot of states across the South and in other parts of the country that have definitely increased the penalties and heightened the what could happen if you actually engage in having some fun.
And don't get me wrong, I don't mean to come across as a Ralph Nader here, because I love to drive fast too. So, but we got to be responsible and watch out for each other.
Yeah. And just to tag on to that, Don, what was it? Last Sunday, the 4th, they actually busted hundreds of cars in an illegal street race in Amsterdam in the Westelijke Havengebied, or the Western Harbor area. Various fines, a driver's license was revoked, and a go-kart vehicle was confiscated, and it was over 200 cars. And they issued a metric posterior ton of fines for dangerous driving, not being able to present valid documentation, and illegally parking on the sides of roads.
All right.
So even we're suffering too, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I haven't been able to take my car to Germany in over a year.
Right. Wow. I'll cap that by pointing out the episode we did with Tim Rogers about the options for safe sporting with the SCCA. Apparently, it's really cheap and easy to get into a guided circumstance where you can learn the limits of your car and go very fast with it. You'd have to check out what this SCCA is doing. And that may be the outlet that people are looking for. Legally, yeah. Right? So,
right. Yeah, it would be good to have a legal and safe for those of us that are spectators.
I wonder if
for those of us who have to use the roads to get to and fro. It definitely, but I'm and affordable. Hopefully, it will be for those people that want to engage.
Right. Yeah, I'm just wondering if the SCCA's marketing people have thought about this.
We should call them and talk to them about it.
Huge opportunity.
All right. Thank you, Dawn.
So that's me on the Autobahn.
thank you very, very much. Let's switch gears and do my segment today, which is grind my gears. I have a grind my gears from our friend Flip, who is actually related to one of our Thing About Cars co-conspirators here. Flip says, oh, people of Costco, you will sit there and wait and wait and wait and wait and wait for a parking space while someone completely unloads a fully loaded shopping cart, then walks to the front of the store and returns. Meanwhile, I will just zip around you and go to the next aisle over where there's a parking space that's even closer. And thank you, Flip. First of all, it's a good little rant. Similar to that, I would say I'm totally guilty of waiting for closed parking spaces, even though I full well know that I will, if I just drove to the end of the row and parked and walked in, I will probably make it into the store before those other guys do. So,
oh, yeah.
Well, first of all, I hate Costco parking lots or any big box because everybody is so, those carts are deadly. You know, they ding your car. I've always parked my cars as far away as possible. I want three spaces on each side. I don't want any one of those cart returns anywhere near my car. I hate coming out and go, where did that little dent come from? It drives me crazy.
This is my partner's approach to parking, except you know, it's not restricted to full lots. We can pull into, you know, a parking lot that is totally empty and he will find a place to park in the next county.
Yeah,
that's about right.
Yeah, I mean, the best place to park is out there at the airport. You can get pretty far away. It's awesome.
You know what's fun to do is if it's a crowded lot and you happen to have a pretty good space near the business, when you get ready to leave, before you get in your car, stand there and shout, "All right, who wants this spot? $5!" And watch people's heads explode.
People are rather communal by nature, and it's surprising. Just to be near someone else, people will tend to move to the closer spots. And you'll find this in movie theaters. My uncle tells the story that he and his wife were the only people in the movie theater. Two people sat down directly in front of them, just about to roost before he said, "Oh, no, you're not." And they moved. But people will tend to congregate.
Universal
law of congregation. That's pretty funny.
The behavior also is interesting to watch. And to your point, not on the airport. So the international terminal for Atlanta's airport, there's a parking deck. And it has a great feature that as you are going up the ramp at the entrance to each deck, there will be a number of available spaces on that deck. And I find it fascinating to watch the people that, you know, will get off on the deck that says it only has one single space because the quest of getting that one space is that important.
It's the same way at Schiphol. When you go into parking, it'll say, you know, there'll be like little signs, you know, above each little intersection that says, okay, over here there's like 43 spaces and over here there's like 5. And everybody goes to the 5 and I'm like, no, I'm going to go over here to the 43.
Well, it's a good grind my gears rant, I think. Thank you, Flip, for the submission. And I'll try to be better about not blocking your way when I'm at Costco. So, Misty, we have time for like one listener mail thing. You got anything for us?
Yeah, it's listener writes in about a 2012 Hyundai Tucson GLS 2.4 liter automatic with 95,000 miles. And say, howdy. Lately, I've noticed my car is acting weird when accelerating. The gas pedal is very sensitive, like just a little pressure change revs the engine significantly more as if it is shifting gears, but the car still struggles to accelerate sometimes. Also, when I start moving from a full stop, it feels like the car is sort of chugging along. Any clue as to what may be the problem? I thought maybe something with the transmission, but I don't know enough to say for sure, and work is really busy right now, so I'm struggling to find time to bring the car to a mechanic.
I have a guess.
I had a bit of it. Well, there's a couple of things it could be that don't necessarily mean they're going to have to shake out every sofa in their house to replace the transmission. It could be a malfunctioning engine control unit. You know, it's kind of just like it doesn't know what it's really doing.
Yep.
It could be bad O2 sensors or a mass airflow sensor.
That was my thought. I think it's breathing improperly.
Could well be, yeah.
could also be a bad throttle body. I mean, it happens. If your throttle gets stuck, your car kind of goes, "Whoa, hello." And then you ask it to walk and it goes, "No, no." But it could also still be the transmission and not be like a pocket emptying matter. It could be worn transmission fluid. When's the last time they've had, you know, they filled up their transmission fluid or had their fluid level checked? You know, that could cause it to slip. You know, it could be one of any of those things. And, you know, and I would definitely take it, you know, find time out of my day to take it to a trusted mechanic and start with the sensors and then work up from there. I wouldn't necessarily panic and say, "Oh my God, my transmission's about to fall out in the middle of 285 on rush hour." It could be a simple transmission fluid change, could be a drivetrain repair.
I don't know. What do you think, Ben?
Oh, well, everything already mentioned is plausible. You know, there are all kinds of possibilities, and I'm not real familiar with that vehicle specifically, but yeah, many, many things. You know, could just need a little bit of resetting something here and there. Yeah, tons of possibilities, and have a pro check it out, because you know, the what it's going to cost time-wise and money-wise now versus later.
You know, and it's interesting. I don't know that car either, but I had some weird thing happen where I kept hitting something and shifting in my SUV. I didn't realize I had downshifters, and I would be thinking I was in drive, and I was in drive two or drive one, and it would make it sounded like that. So I wonder if there's something that's accidentally being hit that's shifting into a different gear, either decelerating or accelerating.
What year is the car again?
It is a 2012.
Okay, so that's all current technology. Yeah, everything's going to be electronic, and yeah, it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think you're right, Misty. Get it in and don't think you're going to, you know, have to change the tran out or there's some big cost. It could be something very minor.
Yeah.
It would be sad if they needed to change the oil.
Yeah, well, you know, and the problem here is, you know, and I'm guilty. I've been guilty of this in the past, too, is, you know, letting it go to the point where you have to change the transmission. So, you know,
yeah.
At this point in time, you know, a checkup is definitely indicated. And I would certainly take it now rather than later. So you're not having to, as I said, shake every sofa to pay for it.
Well, we'll have to do a little bit of research and stay in touch with the asker to see what the actual results were from their problem. But I think it's either the math or something electric. I don't think it's the actual transmission. So
yep.
Good stuff. Thank you, Misty.
You're welcome.
Dave, can you tell us the name of this mysterious cocktail?
Sure. So just to reiterate what our trivia question is this is a car named Cocktail that is made with 1.5 shots of Calvados, 1.5 shots of Dubonnet, 2 dashes of Peychaud's Bitters. Is this cocktail a Le Mans, a Bentley, a Ferrari, or a Harley Davidson? Brian, you want to guess first?
I was going to go with Bentley.
You're going to go with Bentley. Misty, how about you?
Le Mans.
And Le Mans. Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm with Le Mans too.
You know, Le Mans too. Don, I specifically made sure I had two of your cats in here. What do you think?
Thank you. Ferrari and Bentley would very much appreciate it. Le Mans I was leaning toward, but you know, those ingredients do lend itself to more of a French type of appeal. So I think I will go with Le Mans.
Le Mans. So we got 3 for Le Mans, 1 for Bentley. Mickey, what do you think?
Oh man. See, I want to side with logic here, but being a risk-taking individual who likes to go fast on the interstate without anybody's permission. Sorry. I don't know. I don't know. Actually. So it's Bentley, Le Mans. What was the third one?
Ferrari. Or Harley Davidson?
I'm going to say it's a Ferrari.
You're going to say it's a Ferrari. Well, per Difford's Guide for Discerning Drinkers, this cocktail is actually known as a Bentley. So Brian got it correct.
Wow.
Now, I'm almost so excited. A Bentley. I almost the Bentley.
A Le Mans is actually much more complex. It's a shot of Cointreau, a shot of vodka, a tablespoon of simple syrup, a shot of orange juice, and a shot of soda.
That sounds so delicious.
In your research, Dave, how many cocktails have car names?
I have found 10 so far that I have found. The Le Mans, the Bentley, the Ferrari, the Harley Davidson. I've also found a BMW, a silver Mercedes, a Rolls Royce, a Cadillac Margarita, a Ferrari, a sidecar, and of course, my nickname for, you know, I used to be a bartender for a hot minute. My nickname was the Irish Car Bomb.
I was gonna say, I bet you the first one was the sidecar.
Yep. That's the first one I found when Mickey and I were chatting about this online. It did lead me though to think of issuing all of you a challenge, and certainly all the panelists, but all of our listeners at home. We need a signature The Thing About Cars cocktail. The Thing About Cocktail, if you will. So The Thing About Cocktails challenges. And I was sitting here, you know, looking at some of my old mixology books from when I bartended, and you know, I'd like thought, oh, you know, we could mix Galliano and lychee and lemonade and call it the Yellow Lotus, or there could be a, you know, a Bloody Mickey, which is vodka, clamato, and a healthy dash of bitters. So we're going to put this on our Facebook page to put a challenge out. First of all of you are challenged to come up with the thing about cocktails. But you know, basically, anyone who's listening to us, if you want to suggest what our signature cocktail should be, email it into us or post it on one of our social media channels.
I should think that's a great. Yugo would be made with night train and prune juice and a blackjack.
That's too funny. All right, so we've issued the challenge, or at least the request to our listeners to submit a drink recipe. Do they need to submit something like a photo with that? Are we going to compile these in a book or something, maybe?
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. We'd love to, Dan. Take a picture of the cocktail, take a picture of yourself with the cocktail. Yeah, it's actually, that's the thing. If the more disgusting the recipe is, the more it's implicit on you to prove that you drank it.
That reminds me, when I was over in Germany with Uncle Sam many, many years ago, one of the bars I frequented served a thing occasionally, and not many people ordered it, but a few weirdos did, a thing called a diesel, which was a mixture of beer and Coke.
Ooh, it's like the shandy gone wrong.
Yeah. And it looked like diesel fuel, basically. And I have seen that it will leave, you know, permanent marks and slightly eat into styrofoam.
Wow.
Okay, Dan.
Well, yeah.
And just to be clear, we do not condone drinking and driving. This is just for fun because we're people who appreciate fine cars and fine drinks and other fine things. Finery.
I was just going to suggest like my grown-up slushy, which is basically frozen white grapes and Prosecco.
That sounds good.
That does sound good. All right. So we have that challenge, and we still have one challenge up that I think we're going to wrap up next episode, which is to come up with our list of our top five car movies. So if a listener has a list of top five car movies or movies that relate to road trips in some way, please get your lists ready. We are going to talk about that in our next episode. We will be welcoming Loxley Brown back to the table with us for our next episode. She wants to talk about something that's going on with her organization this summer, and I've already asked her to compile her list as well. So we got cocktails and car movies, and I think that makes for a perfect evening. Excellent. Thanks, you guys. As always, to our friends and listeners out there, if you have a moment to rate our show on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts or wherever it is you hear the show, your ratings help us get more visible to other car people across the country, and we really appreciate it when you do that. In the meantime, we hope you and yours are staying safe and healthy out there. Go get vaccinated, wear your mask, be safe, and I will see you on the road. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Bye.
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 Thank you very much.
Listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.